This is Hurricane Season, a podcast that explores some of the biggest storms that have greatly impacted Greater Houston people and policies. On Episode 3, we examine Hurricane Carla.
Today, September 11th hits most of us as the date of the horrific terrorist attacks in New York City and Washington, D.C. But before 2001, the date was significant to Texans for a different reason. It was the day back in 1961 that marked the arrival of a powerful storm.
As of the moment, Hurricane Carla is centered near latitude 26.0 north and 92.9 west. That's 255 miles southeast of Galveston, Texas, and keep in mind that that's where the center of the hurricane is located.
And September 11th, 1961 became a tragic anniversary for many along the Texas coast.
The day the storm went through Galveston and the day my dad died was 9/11 in 1961. So 9/11's had a lot of impact on me long before the one in New York.
Hurricane Carla was the most intense hurricane to strike Texas in the past century. The storm brought record wind speeds. It battered 300 miles of the Texas coast with storm surges from Port Aransas to Sabine Pass. Carla devastated coastal communities, destroying nearly 2,000 homes and damaging tens of thousands more. In modern terms, the storm inflicted damage worth $3.4 billion. I'm Andrew Schneider. For more than 50 years, Hurricane Carla was the benchmark against which all Texas hurricanes were measured. And yet, despite how badly Carla devastated the state's Gulf Coast, experts say the outcome could have been much, much worse. On this episode of Hurricane Season, we explore why.
Hurricane Season is a project of the Houston Flood Museum in partnership with Houston Public Media and is supported by Houston Endowment. Visit HoustonFloodMuseum.org.
Say your name and title, then.
Yeah, Neil Frank. I'm the former director of the National Hurricane Center and spent a number of years at KHOU-TV here in Houston.
Neil Frank had a long and distinguished career as a meteorologist, but in 1961, he had just begun work as a junior forecaster at what was then called the Miami Hurricane Warning Office, now the National Hurricane Center. Frank's baptism of fire came that September, when a tropical storm formed off the coast of Honduras and rapidly gained strength as it crossed into the Gulf of Mexico. The U.S. Weather Bureau, forerunner of today's National Weather Service, had only begun the practice of giving tropical cyclones human names 8 years earlier. This one was the third of the 1961 season. Forecasters assigned the name for the letter C, Carla.
Well, there was no question that it was a very serious hurricane because we did have reconnaissance airplanes that were flying into it.
The U.S. military had been flying such missions since World War II. Pilots flew large, multi-propeller aircraft straight into the eye of a storm. The aircrew earned the nickname Hurricane Hunters. Their primary job was to gather information on wind speed, direction, and barometric pressure. That helped provide longer advance warning of how strong a storm was and where it might strike. These missions, and the information they gathered, would end up saving lives during Hurricane Carla. World War II also brought the first use of radar to track weather. The Weather Bureau began equipping its coastal stations with radar on a wide scale in the mid-1950s. Neil Frank says Carla became the first tropical cyclone that forecasters could track all the way to the coast using the new system.
And we thought, boy, if we could get 1 or 2 or 3 hours of position, why, we can zero right in on where this hurricane is going to make landfall.
But Carla had some surprises in store.
It made several loops. As a matter of fact, 2 complete loops, which caused a lot of problems in determining where the warning should be posted along the coast.
On September 9, 1961, the Weather Bureau issued hurricane warnings for the entire Texas coast. 4 years earlier, Hurricane Audrey had struck along the Texas-Louisiana border, killing more than 400 people. Coastal residents and meteorologists alike wondered, would Carla follow a similar path, or would it strike further south and west, closer to Houston? Clarence West was 13 years old in 1961. He lived in the Oak Forest subdivision of Northwest Houston with his parents, his older sister Beverly, and his younger brother Sam. His father, Clarence Sr., ran a home building business.
He had a model home park there on the airline. But he built homes on lots, including beach-style houses in Galveston.
The weather report still couldn't pinpoint exactly where Carla would come ashore, but the elder West decided he had to take steps to protect his property.
And he and his business partner, Mr. Packer, went to Galveston to secure, if you will, some building sites, some home sites.
Also heading for Galveston was a TV news team from Houston's CBS affiliate KHOU. The team was headed up by 29-year-old Dan Rather. His crew set up cameras inside the Galveston station of the Weather Bureau, bracing for a tremendous storm.
This is a hurricane that's very wide across, running roughly some 400 miles completely across it. But the center is now located 255 statute miles southeast of Galveston. Highest winds are still estimated at 135 miles per hour near the center of the hurricane.
To illustrate the sheer size of this hurricane, Rather got one of the station's meteorologists to draw a map of the western Gulf of Mexico on a piece of transparent plastic. He then placed the map on top of a radar console to show viewers the scale of the storm bearing down on them. The cyclonic clouds covered nearly a third of the map. Its left flank faced southern Texas, while its right faced the Louisiana border.
There's the hurricane eye right there as the radar makes a sweep over it.
Today, showing the radar image of a hurricane on live television is expected. But in 1961, it had never been done before.
But that out in the Gulf is the real McCoy, a lot of rain, a lot of wind out there, heading in the direction of Aransas Pass and Galveston, that general area of the coast through there.
The image and Rather's coverage were instrumental in showing viewers that this was no run-of-the-mill summer storm. But as fast as the winds were whipping around the hurricane's eye, meteorologist Neil Frank says Carla was taking its time to get to shore.
Because Carla moved very slowly, no more than 5 or 6 miles an hour, it gave the coastal residents time to be aware that something big was there, and so there was a major evacuation took place around the Matagorda Bay area.
Matagorda Bay is roughly 150 miles southwest of Houston. Calhoun County governs much of the coastline. In 1886, one of the strongest hurricanes in U.S. history made landfall there and destroyed the port city of Indianola. Carla looked like the second coming of that storm. Thousands of coastal residents fled inland, but not everyone. Norman Marshall chose to ride out the storm at his home in Port Lavaca, the county seat. He gave an interview to the National Weather Service in 2011.
And we put solid boards on it. And most of the family went in there because my grandmother and my mother didn't want to leave.
The morning of September 11th, 1961, Carla's wind speed rose to around 175 miles per hour, making it a strong Category 5 hurricane. It slowed to a Category 4 as it looped off the coast of Port O'Connor, about 20 miles southeast of Port Lavaca. Then it made landfall, pushing a wall of water across Calhoun County. Again, Neil Frank.
The storm surge rolled in to Matagorda Bay. The water rose some 20 feet in the Port Lavaca area, and then you put 10-foot waves on top of that.
The surge topped out at 22 feet above sea level, the highest in Texas hurricane history. 19-year-old Joe Pena stayed to volunteer with the Calhoun County Sheriff's Office. Initially, he and a sheriff's deputy patrolled the roads. Pena, who told his story to the National Weather Service 50 years later, described encountering a man fleeing Port O'Connor in his vehicle.
And it had stuff stacked all over it, you know, so the deputy made a U-turn, and we stopped the guy, and he said, yeah, I'm leaving. So I'm the last one to leave Port O'Connor. And it says, the reason I'm leaving is Port O'Connor's underwater right now.
With the roads becoming too dangerous to travel, Pena and his new colleagues had no choice but to take shelter inside the Calhoun County Jail.
Started getting calls from people saying, you know, we need help. Well, one of the things that the sheriff has said, you know, as soon as the hurricane hits, nobody's leaving this building, you know. If people start calling, they're on their own.
More than 100 miles to the northeast, Carla was wreaking havoc in Galveston. Clarence West, then 13 years old, says his father and his father's business partner, V.D. Packer, had secured their model homes and taken refuge in a hotel along the seawall.
And they watched the storm coming through, called my mother a few times, said they were doing fine.
The elder West was trying to reassure his family. Galveston sat on the right side of Carla relative to the eye, battered by the counterclockwise winds. This is known as the dirty side of the hurricane. Casey Edward Green is the Rosenberg Fellow at Galveston's Rosenberg Library.
Not only did we have wind and water damage, we also had tornadic damage. A tornado went up 21st Street and did tremendous damage to the buildings.
As Carla pushed inland, moving past Calhoun County, Joe Pena and the sheriff's deputies emerged from the jail. They patrolled the county to survey the damage.
I mean, there were wires, trees, limbs, all over the place down. It looked like a war zone, basically.
Carla's storm surge had swept 10 miles inland, covering nearly two-thirds of Calhoun County. Norman Marshall, who rode out the storm in Port Lavaca, says his home survived, but his business, a Buick dealership, did not.
I'd only had it 1 year. I'd built a new dealership and everything, and got down next to the harbor. And water got 4 foot deep in Carla, and that run everything. Had to clean it up and start over again.
The damage in Port Lavaca paled in comparison to what Marshall saw further down the coast in Port O'Connor.
There wasn't anything left. In fact, a lot of the cement foundations were washed away of the houses. And there was one little telephone placed down a concrete block ones, and that stayed. And the Catholic Church down there stayed. Most everything else was just wiped off the map.
To the northeast, water flowed 2 feet deep in Kima's business district. It broke levees in Freeport, leaving the city defenseless before the monster waves. Only a last-minute swing toward the west spared Houston the worst of the storm's wrath. Young Clarence West took advantage of a break in the rain to head over to nearby Oak Forest Park.
The trash barrels were rolling around in the park, and we went down there to kind of watch it and went back to my house. I didn't live that far from the park. And in the meantime, as it turned out, a reporter had called my home and had talked to my sister, but then to my mother, and said that the business partner of my father, Mr. Packer, had come back from Galveston, but that my father was missing.
West later pieced together what happened from Packer's account and from newspaper stories. West Sr. and Packer had decided to try to walk back to Houston from Galveston. They crossed the causeway and made it almost as far as Lamarck before floodwaters blocked them.
They were very tired, and they saw some high power transmission lines. Those very tall ones, 200 feet tall probably, transmission lines that run parallel with the freeway, placed about every couple of hundred yards.
With nowhere left to run, the two men decided to try to cross the water by swimming from one transmission tower to the next until they reached dry land.
And so Mr. Packer made it to the first tower, and he looked around, and my dad wasn't there. And that was the last time he saw him. And they found my dad's body a few days later.
Clarence West Sr. was one of 46 people who lost their lives to Hurricane Carla. Just a few years earlier, Hurricane Audrey had killed more than 10 times that number. The National Weather Service attributed Carla's lower death toll to timely warnings and orderly evacuations. Many experts specifically credited Dan Rather and KHOU's broadcasts with convincing coastal residents to get out of the storm's way. Roughly 500,000 people sought shelter inland. It was the largest peacetime evacuation in U.S. history to date, And meteorologist Neil Frank says, on the basis of that,
we've made decisions to do evacuation studies in all the coastal areas. You know, in 1960, we didn't know how long it would take to evacuate the coastal areas. We know now that in all communities along the coast, how long it would take people to evacuate when a storm surge threatens.
It would be years before those studies would be put to another test like Carla. And by then, Texas had more than one reminder that a tropical cyclone doesn't need to be fast to be dangerous.
Hurricane Season is produced by Andrew Schneider, Davis Land, Todd Holslander, and me, Maggie Martin. Thanks also to KHOU. You can listen to this episode of Hurricane Season and subscribe by going to houstonpublicmedia.org/Harvey. On the next episode of Hurricane Season, we revisit Hurricane Alicia.